football on off the ball.
I would definitely have a question about you. Am I okay saying you're committed to Ireland? And he said, yes, no problem. So he is in our frame. He might be one that we would call in June.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Now, I'm delighted to say Daragh Conaghan is with us in studio because Rian the Fulla is on Monday night, May the 4th at 6:30 on RTE1. This is a new documentary that you've made, a murder mystery series.
Got away from the GAA. I don't think the person or the content is in any way GAA related. So funny enough, a series of coincidences that happened that kind of compelled me to make this documentary. Got a phone call from my uncle there one day a couple of years ago. He said there's a house being demolished over about 10 miles back the road. There's loads of books in there you might be interested in. They're being thrown out. And I said, geez, I love you. I'm always kind of looking for books and stuff like that. And rang the builder. Come across a few books, a few Michael Hartnett first editions and such.
Right, like. Nice.
But, and I told her, I said, look, these books are valuable. Who the hell, you know, these are the orders I got from the family in the States. It's an old house. It's been just demolished.
Right.
They're going to skip. So, yeah, took out about 20 books out of there. One of the books was a book on the history of West Kerry, the history of Kerry Corcoraine, which is where I'm from, West Kerry, effectively. And read it on holidays about a half a year later and said, geez, you know, noted the name of the author, Patrick Foley. I assumed it was the famous PF who was a GA correspondent for numerous years with the Kerry Man back in the 30s, 40s, 50s and onwards. And but no, they're actually first cousins, I think.
Okay, and the maths didn't quite work out because the book is...
Yeah, the book was written in 1907, so yeah. I'm saying it must have been a kind of a... Yeah, it must have been something. And then spoke to Cormac Carrigan at Loose Horse. I'd done work with him before. He had a kind of a tenuous connection to it. And we were, I mentioned... Foley, I mentioned that I had the book. He said you couldn't have, it's quite a rare book. And yeah. I said, well, another story behind that. And he just had an interest in Patrick M. Foley because he had a kind of a connection through marriage, I think,
right,
to Foley. And we just said, this is a story waiting to be told here, you know.
Cormac was part of the original team behind That's Breaking right. Ball, which
yeah,
those of us
it.
Of a certain vintage will remember.
We love that vintage.
and many other great documentaries since. You didn't know it was going to turn into a murder mystery at that stage?
No, it was a funny one. I usually like to know and have a load of research and notes and stuff and might avoid the potholes. But the approach they took with this one was kind of strange. They were drip feeding me this information. We're going to do this and we're going to do this and we're going to do this. So kind of the revelations are genuine.
Yeah.
And I was kind of going, okay, I usually don't like operating that way and I like to know, but there was a good team behind it.
Because otherwise you'd have to act. And no offense, well, that's hard.
It's not Hollywood. yeah. So, you know, as we were going on, you know, I did happen to mention it to a few people locally who would be interested in local history that I was doing a documentary on this guy, Patrick M. Foley. And a lot of what we were getting back, oh yeah, that's the guy that got, that died out in America. And, you know, there was people saying, you know, that there was this, there was that, there was a bit of intrigue about him, but mostly what people were saying, yeah, he was a great carpenter and a great writer.
Right.
I said, yeah, I know he was a good writer. I read one of his books. It's really interesting and stuff like that. But, you know, early enough, you know, you're finding out, okay, there's a bit more to this guy than meets the eye.
Can you spill it back a little bit to the very fact that you got the phone call from somebody saying that there's a lot of books here and you'd be interested? You're obviously open to this. This is obviously like curiosity about the locality and...
I think the older you get, kind of the more microscopic your kind of focus comes, as opposed to kind of, you know, I have no interest in what's going on in American history or politics at the moment. It's all local, you know, and it's very much local, you know. You'll never get to the end of, you know, where you're from or who you are, or, you know, you see the fascination with the 1926 census recently and you're kind of going, that's a bottomless pit of stuff, really, if you're that way inclined.
And yet, obviously, there are echoes of this man's treatment in America when he gets there, that one of your guests say, you know, it's very relevant for today as well. It's funny how the cycles continue.
Yeah, his history repeats in terms of, you know, her acceptance of immigration and stuff like that. You know, he was dealing with that over 100 years ago. What intrigued me was, you know, I'm well aware of all the great writers, mostly in the Irish language of my locality. I was had a certain awareness of PF, Paddy Foley from Dingle, the Kerryman GA correspondent. But this guy completely, I just had a really scant awareness of who he was. And what
until you got that book, that was that your introduction to him?
Yeah, I knew there was a writer, you know, and I knew that, you know, that the Foleys and Dingle were kind of well-read and literate people back in the day, and, you know, their relations to this day are, you know, and they have many relations in the town. And I'm sure I'd be getting a phone call after this documentary airs now to say, did you know that he was related to this such and such? And did you know that there was this theory about him, that theory? We treated what we had in terms of, you know, the knowledge we had approaching the project, and, you know, it brought us kind of all around West Kerry, around Ireland and over to the States.
Ultimately, Boston and Oklahoma.
Yeah. Hadn't been to Oklahoma or Arkansas or these places. So went out there before Christmas last year, missed a West Kerry championship match because of it. And we were filming out in on a mountain, on the side of a mountain in Badgerley Mountain when the West Kerry championship was going on at home. But yeah, it was worth seeing. A lot of driving, a lot of moving around. Passed a sign for Paris, Texas, one of my favourite movies. Was tempted to detour, but we didn't have the time. And
stick a soundtrack on that, we'll have to do it.
Yeah, Roy Cooder will have to do, So, no, but it's always nice to see that people kind of say, you know, it's nice, you know, kind of beyond the stage, you know, of kind of seeing the world through work, you know. I like to keep it local if I can at all. But it was nice to go out there.
Because you talk about seeing the world, but you've done these series with the GAA communities around the world, and this is obviously a very different story. And yet, in a way, it's kind of telling the history of the Irish abroad. Obviously, this one is more juicy than some of those.
Yeah. And not really traditional strongholds of Irish immigration. You know, usually kind of your Boston, Chicago, San Francisco, New York, possibly Philadelphia. But Salisaw, Oklahoma wasn't where I envisaged doing a documentary at any stage.
What did you learn about yourself on all this?
I'm not sure that you learn there's an awful lot of stuff you don't know, and that you'll never get to the end of reading all the books that you want to read, and that you have a whole library at home that you need to kind of start reading more and more of, you know, and that you don't have a lot of time. And even at this stage, you know, even the fact that I'm mentioning missing championship games is always something going on, you know.
Well, I was going to say, you're busy being chairman of An Gaeltacht through like an incredibly momentous season while you're also on the trail of Patrick M. Foley.
Yeah, it was just, it's a period in our lives that we look back on in the Gaeltacht. I think, you know, the line between Dingle and the Gaeltacht back in West Kerry in the last half years, we never felt a winter. We never felt, it was just an amazing period in our lives. And we haven't won a county league game since, and neither have Dingle. And, you know, everybody's saying he's still celebrating. Actually, the celebrations lasted, you know, literally a day or two because you have so much going on.
Yeah.
Sure, a lot longer for the younger lads maybe, you know. But it was a momentous period, really. You know, it was, it's unlikely to be ever repeated.
Was it great that you had something like this ongoing at the same time?
A great distraction. You know, it's not the day job. I take annual leave from the day job to do these projects. But it keeps the mind ticking over, keeps you interested, keeps you curious. And, you know, I don't set myself up, and I certainly won't be walking around Dingle Town saying I'm the man to ask now about Patrick Foley, because there are plenty of amateur local historians, I'm sure, have different theories and different views and different perspectives on his writings as well.
Your broadcasting career has been really interesting. We were just chatting off air. You got straight into it as soon as you quit the game, and that brings with it freshness and knowledge and information, but also it brings with it having to talk about your pals.
Yeah. And you probably don't have the wisdom or the maturity at the time when you're just finishing up playing into county football, because that cliched bubble is there. And I would have been a pundit on the Sunday game for about 5 years through a lot of it was actually easier than maybe it should have been, because Kerry were quite successful. I look at Kieran Whelan, for example, during the glory years of Dublin, and it was quite easy to talk about them because it was mostly positive. But I did get to talk about Paul Galvin's misdemeanors and the O'Shea's and all the lads like, and their antics, you know. But it was a great period of Kerry. I finished up playing in 06, you know. I walked away in the start of 06. Kerry won in All-Ireland 6, 7, lost the final in 8, 9, win it again, and 10 after the down game. That was me done. I did 5 years of the Sunday game. I had started other projects at the time, and it was time to go. But
why was it time to go? Like, you're starting to kind of get good at stuff after a period of time as a broadcaster. Yeah. You feel more confident. And was it that you didn't actually enjoy it that much?
Yeah, enjoy the people, but it's just you're jumping into your car at half 11, 12 o'clock at night, driving down home, getting to, you know, getting into work again at 8 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. And, you know, it's, you have a young family and there's a lot of football going on at home as well, like, you know, involved with the club. Like,
yeah.
Had finished playing at that stage even with the club, you know. But the game had changed, the game had moved on. A lot of the elements of the game that I loved weren't there. The amateurism, and I don't mean in a financial sense, just the haphazard nature. It has just become so detailed, so prepped, so here's one we made earlier and we have an answer for every question, that I just couldn't engage with that.
It was less jazz, more formal.
Yeah, and I kind of, as a media man, you're kind of observing the game and looking at all the proliferation of podcasts, and some of them are excellent, but I actually don't subscribe. You know, you consume is the wrong word. I'm still very much by the newspapers on a Monday morning and Tuesday morning and just read them, you know, with all due respect to all the great work that's going on. I'm a fierce believer in the old, the discarded slogan that the GAA had of nothing beats being there. You know, just going to games, that's where, even if it's a junior B game at home, you'll always pick up something, some nuance, some smart aleck will try something and say, geez, that'd be interesting, how would that transfer to county stuff like. And
it's funny you talk about the newspapers, because they are such an important part of the documentary as well, like there is actually these written records of stuff which on the face of it seem relatively minor. A drunken man gets arrested and has two right swings at the jaw.
Yeah.
And it makes the papers.
Yeah. And the reportage and the style of reporting, you know, is probably not as PC as it is today, you know.
No.
And, you know, but they're a memento. They're a keepsake. They're a thing that tie you to a particular time at a particular place and a particular incident.
Yeah, no,
and
I think
it's changed. I mean,
cultural artifacts is a value in that.
And
so I'm very interested in your sense of where we're going when it comes to media at the moment. So people might be familiar or might not be familiar, but your day job is at Radio Na Gaeltacht. Mm. So you're very plugged into the survival of the language, but also trying to win new audiences.
Yeah.
And they're all different things. Like, you know, you've got one, you're trying to serve many different masters while at the same time building an audience and being current and innovative. It's tricky.
Yeah, and you probably know better than most. Like, it's like, you know, you meet somebody and it's basically storytelling, you know. It's a common greeting in the Gaeltacht for us. Even today, I rang a fella and the first thing he said, Ainch Keel, any story, any yarn. So it's like, what's the crack in English or whatever? Ainch Keel, and that's, well, here's the story. And that's broadcasting, really, isn't it? And, you know, the game is above all that, I think. You know, you throw in the ball. I found this as a player. The final whistle was just a total anticlimax. Everything that was said about the game afterwards, or celebrations, or drowning sorrows, or other, it was, everything was an anticlimax. And I got that again this year when we won the All-Ireland even. There's about a 10-minute period, a half an hour at most. And it's, everything else then is, it's probably disrespectful to people that celebrated to say it's an anticlimax, but it's and especially in this sense, because it was so community connected and stuff, and you're meeting people that night. People hadn't seen the Gaeltacht winning, and the following week seeing people that hadn't seen Dingle winning in All-Ireland, saying, you know, there's tears in their eyes, and it's a genuine, genuine thing. But whatever it is, I suppose, in the next footballer being competitive, you're thinking, geez, how are we going to cope at senior level? How are we going to do in Division 1, Division 2 next year? And you're moving on all the time. And I think that's the way it should be for sport, if the game is truly to be revered. Final whistle goes, that's it, magic stops.
Yeah.
You know?
That's definitely your elite mindset kicking in there, because like, talking to you around the time, there's another part of you that is just totally clued into the great arc of the history of the Spree.
And that's the storytelling element. Yeah, And, you know, Micheál Martin used to always say, you know, part of, he was to be debating this, part of the game there is the anticipation, the talking about it. And you know you've had a good game, be it hurling or football, when people are walking out of Croke Park and the following day and they're still talking about it. I get that side of it. But for whatever wiring that I have, it's kind of final whistle. And that's done.
That's because you love the game, I suspect. The actual, the ebb and flow of the match.
The ebb and flow of the match. You know, it's funny. I remember watching Dublin and Mayo, I forget what year, one of the finals, and Lee Keegan is in his prime. And you're getting hairs in the back. I'm not from Mayo. I have no affinity. I don't know Lee Keegan. But I'm going, jeez, this is magic. It's pure magic. Right in the moment, like, you know, you're feeling it, like. And you're I suppose a spectator. That's the game, and then you're not playing it. You're not in the middle of it. You're not there. And it's something I always was curious about when I finished, you know, around the time I was finishing playing, how the game how post-match became so anticlimactic. The first couple of years you win in All-Ireland and you go mad drinking and celebrating and all that. But then it becomes, do you know what? You know, what's next, you know?
Yeah, that was definitely the kind of the Roy Keane element of it. I do feel like your ability to write columns over the years as well was something that was able to tell those stories. So you were obviously, I don't know if you were conscious or not of that, but you were capable of taking these three or four bits of information and putting them together in a narrative. And at the end of it, I always felt like, oh, I've learned something new here.
Mm.
That writing side of things, Osbeirle as well, obviously, it's your second language. What was that like?
Time consuming, you know, and then when kids come along, a nuisance, you know, and you just...
Homework, like.
Yeah, you know, I have nothing but respect for people that can, you know, give you in the space of 3 minutes, you know, how many kickouts, how many this, how many that, all these statistics and stuff like that. And say, yeah, they are important. I know they're important. I'm on the sideline long enough to know they're important, but that's not where it's at really in terms of the storytelling around the game for me. Like, you know, writing about it was always going to be second best to playing. Talking about it was always going to be second best to playing. And even on the sideline, being a selector, being a chairman, it doesn't come anywhere near playing, you know.
Is management part of your future? Would you go back?
I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't have the skills, I'd say, for that kind of side of it. You know, it's...
Were you a candidate at one point? There was a rumour.
I was part of a package that went in, Seamus Mine and Donny Buckley, a load of lads, you know, around the time that Tyrone beat Kerry in 2021.
Right.
We came, you know, with a kind of a package that we thought we could contribute something, but they went with the right man, I think, as he proved. And, his, you know, he had a good friend of mine, David Murphy, on the ticket as well, like, you know, so... I think it was a very healthy thing that there was so many people willing to take up the baton in Kerry, because I think I dread the day that somebody won't, that the right person won't want it. I mean, we were very lucky to get Eamon Fitzmaurice, I think, in 2012 when Jack finished up that time, and he hadn't cut his teeth properly at under 21 level. You know, it was a huge Gnaeve Mishnigh, a huge act of bravery on his part to do, and he did 6 years that time. He plugged a huge gap, and after him came Peter Keane, fell short of an All-Ireland. And the continuum of Kerry football, which always fascinated me, you know, it's a thing I would have thought of at the time when we went in 2021 for the job, that there was a bit of backbiting going on, and you're kind of saying, I don't, like, the previous regime got an awful lot right. The next regime will get an awful lot right. Why can't we just hand on the baton and not have our egos in place to say, I'm a better manager than you, or our management is better than yours? But that's the nature of it. That happens. There's a lot of competitive people around Kerry football, and they want to be part of the narrative. But ultimately, I see it with Aidan McGarrett at the moment. I saw with Deirdre Murphy, a good friend of mine, before. They've contributed an awful lot of time, you know, and to be willing to do that. And I just felt that at that time, 5 years ago, I was part of a group that wanted to contribute something in that way as well. Didn't work out, but it did work out for Kerry football. They got the right guys.
And because it's now 5 years down the line, you wouldn't think about doing it again?
There's a time and a place for a lot of things. Yeah. And I think, you know, that ship has probably sailed. There's a lot of bright young things coming through in Kerry coaching and in Kerry football at the moment. There'd probably be, you know, better off without, you know, whether you like it or not. And I see it in the Gaelic dressing room, you know, they look at you as old now, you know, and they look at you as maybe lacking in innovation and stuff like that, but we're always learning, you know.
Well, that's, I think, the willingness to be curious. I think that was kind of the point I was getting at. Somebody rings you because they know you're curious. They know, everybody knows, if I find a book, I'm going to ring Dara and go, you might be interested in this. And being open to these projects leads to this, you ending up
it's funny.
Paris, Texas.
I get a lot of these phone calls. There is still an old man in Tralee called Paddy O'Mahony. He had a load of old pictures of his brother-in-law, Bill Kinnerk. Rings me up, or didn't know the man at all. Rings me up and he said, I have a load of photographs of my house. I'd like you to have them. And I said, would you not give them to somebody? He had a very valuable cup, which he did donate to Croke Park Museum, I think. He said, look, I just want to give them to somebody who values them. And I said, I'm not going to be putting them up in my house at home, like, you know, but I do like old photographs. I like conversations around old games.
Did you do history in college?
No, not at all. No, I did. Chemistry was my thing in school.
Right.
Yeah, no, but it's just kind of a late vocation.
And what happened? Where did that come from?
Around the time when I was playing for Kerry, I think that you got a realisation from Paddy Shea, a lot of it, like that it was a bit bigger than the game. Okay. You know, that the history meant a lot. Paddy used to tell a yarn, maybe unwittingly he was opening a door to the history of it for us, that, you know, himself and Joe Cahan were travelling to an All-Ireland final one day and Paddy forgot a pass or something like that. And Paddy was all upset that they wouldn't get into Croke Park. He was a player, Joe Cahan was a selector. And Joe Cahan gave him a very quick lesson on the history of Kerry football. He said, you know, we paid for Croke Park, ourselves and Louth bought Croke Park, so if they stop us getting in here, like, you know, we can say we effectively own the pitch, like typical Kerry arrogance, of course, like, but I just think there's more to this, isn't there?
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of thing needs to be told as well. You don't just kind of get all the sports science, get all the nutrition, get all the packages that come with the modern game, but there's a cultural element to it as well. Why you play for Kerry? Somebody might wake up someday and say, playing for Kerry is shite, isn't it? It's not that important. It's 30 lads running around the field, kicking a ball around the place.
Yeah.
I'm better than you. But that cultural thing that underpins it, in all counties, not just Kerry, is very important to me.
That's what you were doing with the club team.
Yeah, it's subtly, hopefully, and, you know, hopefully that they're great lads. Like, they know, they connect, you know. And I think everybody does. I think they feel it as a pressure at the start, you know, because good players came before them and there's a kind of an onus. And
also there isn't a million other people who will step in if they decide to step away.
Yeah.
The numbers are...
That's the beauty of junior football, isn't it? You put up the poll and say, okay, we have a game on Sunday.
Yeah.
Who's available? And, you know, junior football knows. But it's a great act of just, I'm going to give 2 or 3 hours to this just to play. It's pub team stuff, a lot of it. Like, but it's important. It's important that, you know, you can say that we have a second team, that we have a team, not just a successful team that won stuff in Croke Park, that we can play in Division 7 of County League, and we can watch lads who were once very good footballers and some lads who were going to be great footballers merge together and play football. Now, we've all done that.
When Paddy awakens that, whatever it is in you, is that when you start having conversations with people like Michal? Or is that later on?
Yeah.
Do you go and seek them out?
Michal O'Murtig was a great friend of Michal O'Shea, who was a work colleague of mine. I had the pleasure of getting to know them at a very young age and listening to them kind of...
Michal did the All-Ireland finals on the minor finals.
All-Ireland, yeah. Okay. A great man to work with and, a fountain of knowledge on Kerry football and all things local and culture, like, and he taught me a lot, you know. And Michal O'Murtig was part of his entourage, Martin O'Keara, another sports reporter. He was editor of head of sport and Radio Gaelic for years, like, and they were great pals. And that notion that Michal O'Murtig had of the anticipation and talking around the game, and that's effectively what we do, isn't it? You know, and you're kind of saying, nothing beats being there, but it's nice to kind of sharpen that anticipation, because the menu is so wide now. You're saying, how do we sell this? And there's 5,000 people watching Kerry and Clare the last year. You'd wish there was 25,000.
Especially because Clifford's playing.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It was the same in my time. Morris Fitzgerald is playing.
Yeah.
And I remember when I finished up playing, there'd be days I'd be trying to get my old man to go to a National League game in Killarney, and you'd always say, Gooch will be there. And he will do something.
Yeah.
But you'll come away saying, Jesus, worth being there, you know. And it's the same with Clifford. Now, we're privileged. It's an absolute privilege. And it isn't always those three lads, but in my time it was Morris. I remember people coming to my house saying, you know, is Morris Fitzgerald, oh, the South Kerry Championship, I'm going away down, it's 2 hours away, like, knock yourself out. And I know people who did travel down from Galarus to South Kerry, like, say, just to watch Morris kick a ball. Like, and that's, to me, the game, you know, the privilege, you know, to play against the likes of Kieran McDonald, Matty Ford, these lads that were unbelievable footballers. Like, you know, you wish they were all from Kerry, like, but they're not.
Well, we're glad that there are some of them who aren't, otherwise it would be every year. To go back to the question about the future of media, and how is writing the Gaeltacht getting on? Like, it feels, I don't know if you're at the coalface of this, but it feels like there's the beginning of stirrings of that kind of period just before the Rising, where a new sense of people wanting to learn the language and trying to become part of it.
Yeah, I thought for a moment that you were going to say Irish language is having its moment, which I recoil at.
No,
and it is having it. I'm probably the wrong person to ask in that regard because I'm inside that bubble,
Well, what's it like in there?
It's a language that's struggling. It's a language that's being diluted. It's a language that a lot of people who care an awful lot for the language are fighting very hard to preserve, to keep, and not in an identity kind of way, in a way that just, it's a means of communication for many of us. And it's just, for more of us, then it's a way of earning a living as well, But that's secondary to what drew us to the language the first day. And, this week on Red of the Guts, for example, we had NECAP in studio up in Derry Beag in our studios, and it's great. They are drivers of what's going on with the language at the moment. They're taking it a different direction, and the traditionalists like myself are saying, we're not going to stop that. It must evolve like traditional music, like any kind of music or any kind of cultural movement. It has to evolve to stay alive. But it's not the language that I identify with as a kid and that my grandfather spoke to me or that, And that's not being elitist or snobbish about it.
I'm really interested in that. Like, is that a concern?
It's a concern, I suppose, for any language, and I'm sure for linguists more from myself than broadcasters, that, that the richness that was once in the language, and it's probably the same in English, it's probably the same in all languages, that
people's vocabularies are shrinking.
They are. Yeah. Yeah. And that reverence for the spoken word maybe isn't as strong as it used to be like that. It's a snobbish attitude. I get that. I've been told that.
Are you wrestling with that, or are you like...
Yeah, because my own kids don't speak the language as well as I do, or I don't speak it as well as my father and uncles and grandparents and did. That's just a natural progression of language.
Is that just natural? Is that just how things go, and that actually there's room for growth with the dilution, or is there not?
And that's what we're seeing at the moment. That growth is there. I mean, famously for 40 years, the Gaelscoil in the 50 years, people can say now, oh, well, I got my education through Irish. Yeah, but, there's a bit more to it than that. Like, this is about, keeping that thing going, keeping the unbroken, continuous strand going and not being on your high horse about it. It's an open invitation to anybody to...
How do you do that? Yeah, that's the...
Yeah, teachers have failed. The education system has failed. Great teachers haven't, but it's hard. It's a challenge it's completely natural because English is the mórthanga, the mother tongue at the moment, and massive colonisation job done. It's been really successful.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get political about it. I mean, NECAP will do that for you, but it has happened, and it is happening. And
so, is the alliance with the NECAPs of the world an uneasy one in some ways?
Not at all. No. It's to be welcomed. They've what the direction they're taking in the language is to be welcomed, but it's not the whole story.
Yeah.
There are different stories, and they're not contending stories. They're complementary of each other.
I suppose that's the bit where I'm wondering, is that where the room for growth comes from? And then if people get curious, there's at least these conversations to be had about, have you tried our variation?
Yeah, it's like hopefully a pollen for the bee, just come and see what we've got here.
Yeah.
And cross-pollinate and, work on it like that. But from where I am and where I probably will be is kind of, it's not being, I hope, not being purist about it, but just saying, I'd like to preserve the language that I heard in my youth. I'd like to preserve that richness. I'd like to hear it. I'm realistic enough to know that I probably won't. But at the same time, I'd be hopeful enough to think that, what's happening with the language at the moment will make it more accessible and more cross-pollinated than it ever was in the history of languages. And obviously technology is helping with that as well.
Yeah, that's quite a good why that you were talking about earlier on for you to be able to I have the club obviously and you have your media career, but the other thing central to this is actually helping to preserve our language. It's a very noble thing to be doing.
Yeah, and whether they're aware of it or not, footballers have that ambassadorial role especially if you play for the Gaeltacht. It was a great privilege to be there the following week when Paul Gainey spoke entirely as Gaeilge, lifting the cup as well. And obviously the Gaeltacht man in me was saying, whatever. But, I thought it was bigger than that. It was a bigger moment for the two parishes, the two clubs. Public School Corcoraine, where Eamon Fitzmaurice is the principal, which had a history of fighting language causes.
Yeah.
And it was very, very gratifying and just rewarding to see Paul Gainey up there in the Hogan Stand speaking not our language, his language, their language, everybody's language as well. It was very important, I think.
Like, outside the bubble, I was unaware of that. It just feels like there are these things that are happening at the same time. There are musicians who are singing Oscuelga, and I'm not talking about kneecap, but like who are pushing the boundaries of traditional Irish music. And I've got friends who are in the traditional Irish music community who are a little bit like you going, are these hipsters? If they're hipsters, I'll let them in, but only because I think that we can get them onto the good stuff afterwards.
I think there's room for everybody in the house. You know?
Well, that's my outsider's view.
Yeah, we're not that big.
Because it does feel like it's a bit more accessible, and it feels like when you're fighting with your kids to do it, you're actually, no, there's a reason behind this. We were colonized. You have to learn this language because you're going to speak it.
Yeah, you have to learn the why. You know, it's not a... I was educated as a primary school teacher as well, like, and you're kind of going, you're taught how to teach language, the Irish language, and you're kind of going, is that really the way to do it?
Yeah. Opposed to the reason we're doing this.
Yeah, yeah. There has to be a kind of a cultural underpinning of it, and unfortunately...
Well, that's my point, is I think there's a bit of a thing coming through where
I think there is, yeah. I think there's a realisation now, and obviously the literature around it is more readily available than it ever was, and people are getting curious about it. And that is where the likes of NECAP come in, because they cross so many barriers and borders, and they say, listen, this is just a language.
Yeah.
This is the language we were reared with. We just love our music. This is what we do. And I think, you know, long may that continue.
My last bit about analysis and stuff like that, obviously you presented Show Sport for a long period of time on TG Car, and there wasn't anything really like that where there was just people chatting about the stuff and really into it. I just thought it was great that there was that.
It was a mad program. Like you'd walk in on a Friday and Ger Lachnan is sitting there with that, you know, just that mischief in his eyes. Paddy Shea is sitting next to you and you're kind of saying, Paddy, will you just straighten yourself up on the couch? It doesn't look right, like, for TV, you know. It was Jarlett Burns, who's now president.
Yeah.
They were all, anybody and everybody was there. Your Kieran Kilkenny, when he was an 18-year-old kid, like, just after doing his cruciate, comes in and, you know, he's there in his crutches. All those great memories. And they're coming into the studio every Friday night. I think that was the star of the show, the Friday night.
Was that in Galway or down in Ring?
It was in Connemara. Right. It was in TG Carr headquarters in Connemara. And, you know, the slot on a Friday night where the anticipation is there, they said, you know, what did Ger Lachnan, what will Ger Lachnan say now? You know, what, and it wasn't analysis driven as such. It was just a bit of colour, a bit of character and a bit of banter ahead of the weekend. The vacuum that it left behind has been filled by loads of podcasting and stuff like that. And there's no shortage of opinion now, probably more informed maybe even than I was, like, but at the same time, It was a genuine privilege to get to know a lot of the great former managers, former players, the likes of Lachnan, you know, to have Paddy in the studio. It was a lot of Kerry, you know, it was Tomás O'Shea's cut his teeth. You know, Tomás famously would never do interviews when he was playing.
Yeah.
And I talked him into when he,
we didn't know the sound of his voice. Yeah. He was like the Kenny Herders.
Yeah. So you have Tomás giving his opinions, and as we know, he's a very sharp mind on the game.
Brilliant.
You know.
Yeah.
So, you know, he would have started off on the programme as well. Like, so it was a great privilege to do that, those years with Show Sport.
I do. There's a lot of very heavy analysis that people, like the core 10 or 15% really want, but the broader audience is actually... They want some of that, but they also want the crack, and they want the rivalry stuff.
You know, I would have worked with Joe over the years where, you know, he'd prod you and he'd rile you, and you would get angry, and you do get it. And God be good to Michael Lester, was a brilliant facilitator of that kind of dynamic. Everything you've heard in the last couple of weeks about, you know, is, you know, he did that so well, but you know that's why they were there. Half the time you're kind of going, statistically, I would say, Joe, all those stats are wrong, but actually your opinion is very colourful and really, really, you know, worth listening to, you know, so find the balance somewhere in there.
I think,
you know,
on the show a couple of weeks ago, he confessed to making some of them up, actually.
Yeah, I'd believe that, but it was good crack.
And do we need more of that, I suppose, is the question that I'm going to finish with here. Like, what is, when you're talking to the team and writing the Gaeltacht, you've got to find that mix. When you're watching TV, what do you actually want?
The game itself really is the Sean Cluhean moisture. The game is the master, you know, and the final whistle is still the anticlimax. The game, that buzz that I get from watching somebody like Lee Keegan, who I'm totally unconnected to, they just said, "Jeez, he's good, isn't he? Dermot Connolly, he's good, isn't he?" And this is, you know, you're 10 years out of the game at this stage.
Yeah.
That's what I want. I want to, I want Morris Fitzgerald over and over again. You know, I want to see that kind of magic. That's something different. We get it. We get it all the time. We get it, fortunately, with David Clifford. And there's more than David Clifford. You know, we're seeing it with a lot of players.
And then I suppose when the analysis happens on TV and they're showing you the, you know, the zonal versus the man marking, does that
do that ourselves in the at club level. We you know, we try and explain game plans and we want certain zones and we want certain, and it's that should be for, you know, me staring at my computer during the week and other, you know, it knows it for the masses. It's for the players. And, you know,
you want a high priest to translate it all into
and just to kind of glorify it in some way, and that to say that, you know, and I think by and large we, you know, sports media do that, you know, but don't get too bogged down in the minutiae of kind of, you know, he did that now because this, you know, there's a certain amount of informing, but it should be entertaining as well. Michal Amurtig's old thing of, you know, talking about the game, that's where the talk is. Going to the stands, it's there, you know, when lads are going out at halftime for a burger or whatever, there's great old yarns going on, you know.
The programme is on Monday night, half past six.
Half six, yeah, Monday night. Looking forward to see how it comes across, and I'm sure I'll be getting texts now telling me where I went wrong and that did I know this when I was doing the documentary and had I known that. But it's a good stab at kind of casting and shedding a bit of light and on an interesting person, I think.
Oh, incredible stuff. How do you follow this one up?
Yeah, over to you, Cormac Carrigan, or someone like that, I think, you know, come up with some other series of coincidences and stuff like that. But yeah, working on something at the moment, we'll say no more.
Right, well, I wish you the very best with it, Dara. Privileged to have you with us today. Thanks a million.
Cheers, Joe.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50-milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150-milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Football on Off the Ball.
I will definitely have a question about you. Am I okay saying you're committed to Ireland? And he said, yes, no problem. So he is in our frame. He might be one that we would call in June.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.